Hi, and welcome to the Audio Art Gallery. Whether you're visually impaired or perfectly sighted, my aim is simple. Once a week, to bring art through the audio airwaves for you to enjoy.
Episode 6, Muses, by the Japanese artist Jōki Fukuhori and The Gestation of Jesus, by the Argentine artist Zuzula.
Hi, my name's Dave Cass and I'm an artist, and I'm going to be your audio guide throughout these podcasts in the Audio Gallery. We've managed to get some really fantastic artwork for you to enjoy in the gallery today. First of all, we're going to talk about the contemporary Japanese artist Ryusuke Fukuhori. Look at his style in particular, because he creates sculptures come paintings, and you'll understand why when I describe his work in part one. And then we're going to look at two of his sculptures, one called Muses and the second one called Wooden Bowl. And then we're going to go across another continent to South America, to Argentina in fact, and we're going to look at the Argentine artist Zul Solar, and then there'll be an audio description of one of his paintings, which is called The Gestation of Jesus. So let's go and have a look.
Part 1.
Ryusuke Fukuhori was born in Aichi in Japan in 1973, and then in 1995 he graduated with his Bachelor's in Fine Arts from the university there. Following that, he then decided he was going to follow art full-time, but was pretty unsuccessful, and he ended up in a sort of nadir point in about the year 2000. And he describes as lying in bed, feeling really low, and then looking down at a goldfish he had in a goldfish bowl on the floor. And he neglected this goldfish for about 7 years, really, and he's looking at it in his dirty water, and he's watching it flowing through the dark sort of misty brown water that it's been left in. And he's mesmerized by this, and he thinks, the goldfish, that's what's going to save me. It's goldfish. And he becomes an avid goldfish fanatic and artist. He really does know everything about goldfish. So he starts painting them, but then decides that he's going to paint in quite a different style. And what he does is, and this is why I talk about his paintings come sculptures, is he'll take an everyday object, so let's just say a cup, of a normal teacup. He'll pour a little bit of resin, clear resin, into the cup, and then on that layer, once it's dry, he'll then paint the initial part of a goldfish moving. Then he'll pour some more resin in, then he'll paint another layer, and then there's more resin, another layer, and another layer. So what you end up with is this beautiful sculpture in everyday objects, or painting come sculpture, in everyday objects of, say, a single fish or groups of fish, and he'll paint bubbles and other things as well. And they're so lifelike, you look at it and you want to put your finger in the water, but of course it's hard resin. So that's the style that he's done. He's very well sought after artist. He's got lots of gallery work, got lots of shows, and won lots of awards. So now let's go and describe two of his most fantastic sculptures.
Part 2.
As you look along the end of the viewing hall, you'll see that there is a wooden bowl, a wooden sushi rice bowl, sitting on a plain white wooden plinth. That plinth is about 1 meter high, about 70 centimeters across. And I deliberately brought you at the end of the hall so that as we walk towards it, you'll see from going from this profile view of the bowl, you'll get the magic of actually starting to be able to, as we come closer, walking in and looking into the bowl itself. And that's where the magic is, the discovery with Fukuhori's Muses of this bowl of goldfish. And what you've got is this sushi rice bowl, which is 60 centimeters in diameter and almost 16 centimeters deep. And as we peer over the top and look inside, you've got this glorious circle swirl of goldfish all following each other. It looks like there's about 50 goldfish in this bowl swimming in a circular mass. But that's not all we've got here, because as you look, there's this plain ladle with a wooden handle going in and a metal cup. It's only about, 5 centimetres, 10 centimetres wide, this cup. And it's just resting in the resin, which is obviously looking like water. So about a third of it's in the water. And we've got some goldfish sitting inside this cup as well. So if you imagine we're looking at it now, we're peering over and we're standing at the 6 o'clock position. We're peering in. We've got this circular swirl swimming in an anti-clockwise direction. The majority of the goldfish are. And then at about the 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock position, we've got this ladle going into the water. Now, there isn't just goldfish in here. We have another of varieties as well. So not just that golden red colour. We have some greys and we have a couple of blacks. But the majority of the fish are like small goldfish, small koi carp with some little markings as well, but very, very small. And then as we look towards the 3 o'clock, so move towards the right, we can see that we've got small little green lily pads, so miniature lily pads just floating on the surface, it appears, of the water. And then we've got this beautiful painted S-curving tube, which goes then to a filter, which of course would be for real, where we'd be aerating the water itself so the goldfish should live. And we've got this filter and we've got painted bubbles. So you get this effect of a snapshot of time where you've got the goldfish all following each other on a shoal, but in a large circle swirling around the outside, leaving a small gap in the center. There's spoon on the left, and then you've got this snaking hose with the filter. And if you could do, you would automatically, you'd want to put your hand in the bowl and actually feel the fish. And if you can't imagine from my description what it looks like, then just imagine putting your finger in the bowl and being able to feel these fish as they're swimming round and round, just gently bumping and swimming in between your fingers as they go round. Because that's the feeling, that's the impression that you get when looking at this marvellous sculpture, which he made in 2011. So that's Muses. So having looked at this large sculpture of his with many goldfish in them, and this light wood that made this the sushi bowl, and then this bright goldish ladle that was in it, we're now going to look at a much smaller sculpture. So if you turn around, and you'll see in that niche on that raised platform, you'll see a much smaller sculpture. Now this is about 8 centimetres by 8 centimetres by 10 centimetres. And what we have here is a wooden bowl that looks like it's been broken in half. And that's quite typical of his techniques. We will use normal everyday objects that have perhaps been broken and disused, and he'll use them as the basis for creating these little ponds or pools of resin, which you might find one fish or cricket or something inside. In this case, what we've got though is this dark wooden bowl with a beautiful sort of almost like walnut marbling along the outside of it. Inside the concave of the curve. And if you imagine that you took a cup of water and you just dribbled it in there and then there was a fish in there, that's exactly what we get here, this half bowl lying on its side with the broken half at the top, and then in this curve this pool of water that's just large enough for a single, it's a white goldfish with beautiful fan tail to be swimming in there. And the fish is horizontal. Having said that, it does have its mouth coming up towards the surface. Its fins are out, and it's almost creating like a hook. So its tail is hooking towards its left behind it as it's turning round inside this bowl. And what I really like is the contrast within this, because the sort of the walnut colour of the wood makes the resin look very dark around it. So you've got this very great contrast of this darkness around the bottom of the fish, but because it's clear resin, you can see the painted details on the fish absolutely clearly, which gives this marvellous 3D effect. And if you go to the website, I'll include a number of links on the information. One will be to a video so you can actually see him making one of his sculptures and see him using the resin and then painting with the acrylic and then adding more resin, so you get a real feel for how he does his work. But I'll also link to the gallery so you've got a large selection of his works and his sculptures. So if you can see it, you'll get a real appreciation for the variety of work that he does. I say variety, I should say the variety of utensils, because that's an essential part of his story, is using sort of everyday objects but making them look beautiful, because there's this one common dynamic that he has in all of his work, and that's a goldfish, either singly or en masse.
Part 3.
The Argentine artist Sul Solar was born in San Fernando, Buenos Aires province in 1887 and died in April 1963. Now, he was quite a man in a way, because not only was he a painter, he was a sculptor, he was a writer, and he invented a couple of imaginary languages as well, and I'll talk a bit more of those in detail in a minute. He was actually well-travelled. He travelled through Europe in his early years quite well, met a number of famous artists, and these are people who certainly influenced his style, or he saw artwork of theirs and admired it greatly. If I was to describe his paintings, I would say there was a mixture in there between a little bit of Paul Klee, and by that I mean the sort of the use of bright colours, the watercolour style that Paul Klee has. There's certainly in his more abstract designs, a little bit of Kandinsky that you can see in there as well. But because he was into this sort of mystical reasoning for art, you also get a feeling that there's an influence of Chagall in there as well. So if you can imagine morphing those three artists together into one, this is the man you get, Xul Solar. Now, Xul Solar wasn't actually his name, but that's the name he painted on her. And he said ostensibly that was to make his name an awful lot simpler. He certainly would have trouble writing on a painting because his full name was Oscar Augustin Alejandro Schultz Solari. But if you take his name that he painted under, which the first painting I think he signed was 1916, Xul Solar. If you take the Xul part of it and you turn it round, it actually writes as lux, and lux is a unit of measurement of light, of luminous intensity. So if you combine that with solar, it really means the intensity of the sun. And that fits in beautifully with the affinity he has with a universal source of light and energy and a universality in general, which, again, you'll see in a second as I talk about some of the things that he invented and was involved in. He was a surrealist painter, and when you look at his painting, you can see he's wanting to raise his paintings to some sort of ethereal utopia or an imagined universe. There's floating cities, there's strange symbols, get winged horses and pyramids, and frightening, strange sort of mixtures between machines and airplanes and people. But he wasn't just restricted to artwork, because his vision of utopia, he actually created what he called universal languages. And he actually thought that Spanish, which was, of course, was his native language coming from Argentina, was out of date as a language, and he invented one which was he called Neo-Criollo. And really that was a mixture of Spanish and Portuguese, a bit of French, and English and Greek, so a lingua franca, if you like, but there's also Sanskrit involved in there as well. So he was trying to create this universal language of South America. And he actually used to speak in this language to people. He's actually written quite a lot in this language that he wrote. And he also, apparently, if you look at his artworks, you can see that he's used symbols and meanings in the artwork as well within this language system that he invented. But he didn't just stop at languages. Was a musician as well, was into music, and he modified a piano to make it simpler to learn. So we ended up with this, if you imagine three rows of piano keys, I suppose almost like an organ, but using colour keys, and it played in a scale of his own invention as well. And the colour keys responded to colours which he used in his paintings. So again, you get this mix or this message that he's trying to get across in his paintings, using symbology, but also by the use of colour and the different use of colour, he's trying to get you fully emerged in the art, because there's music within this as well. And so what he's trying to do here is this celestial type of environment that he's creating with his magic watercolours and sculptures.
Part 4.
Xul Solar painted his artwork, which is on the wall, in 1954. And it's a watercolour on paper, measures 50 centimetres by 35 centimetres. Because it's a watercolour, you get the lightness of the paper showing through the colours. I mentioned that was very like a Paul Klee style, but it fits in with what he was trying to say with his name, Zoe Solar, this heavenly light, if you like, or solar light, this light shining through his works. Now, gestation period is up to 3 months in a pregnancy, so we're talking about the very early period of pregnancy of Jesus. And the idea we've got here is, as we are looking at it, I would say about the top, from the bottom to two-thirds of the way up, three-quarters of the way up, and on the right-hand side we have Mary. Now Mary is standing, and we've got from just below her waist line, that's where the bottom of the paper cuts, and she's standing, and if you imagine it, if you imitate what I'm trying to describe here, with her eyes closed, she's got elbows together against her sides, but her hands are up in front of her chest. And if you bring your hands up to about where your throat starts from your chest, with your hands facing forward and your thumbs nearly touching each other, that's the position that she's in. Now, if you do this, you'll notice that from the top of your head down to your hips, that forms almost a triangular shape, and this is what he's used in his artwork. She's wearing a golden crown. But what we've actually got is, underneath her crown and going along at her sides and covering her shoulders and coming around to the front, but leaving a gap, is like a blue silk veil. And it's transparent. We can see through it. And unusually for Mary, she's actually wearing a red dress. So we get, looking through this sort of shimmering effect of her clothes, you can imagine the red underneath this blue. And then there's this gap in the veil, which is lined up really with her ears, with her hair, where her hair is. And her ears, you get this gap through this veil, and that's where her hands are. And then you get this looping red gown or dress that she's wearing. Very unusual colour for her to be wearing red. Normally you see her in blue. And actually the overall painting effect of the painting is one of reds. It's more flesh tones. Why? Again, we harken back to that gestation period. So we're supposed to be, the way I interpret it anyway, we're supposed to be inside the womb, or it's that effect of the flesh. Now, when we go from her hands and we go directly to the left, so on the same level as her hands are, we have, just beside the outside of her veil on the left-hand side, we have a golden circle. And within that golden circle, we've got a very young embryo, baby embryo, and it's obviously supposed to represent Jesus. Now, from this ill-formed embryo, it's at that stage, it's almost like a fish, really, but with an eye, you get the umbilical cord coming out from it, and the embryo itself is curved in line with this sort of seed egg, if you like, inside this golden symbol that is within, is curving towards the left as well, with the head at the top, and then the legs coming out in the curve at the 6 o'clock at the bottom of the circle within it. But you've also got this umbilical cord, which is red, which is going out from its stomach, going over the top of its head, and then a sort of a curving shape going towards Mary, sort of hidden way, but it doesn't join with her, but you get this impression of it joining with her. Now, I think what he's trying to do within the painting as well is give you a sense of, according to the story, you've got the earthly and you've got the outer worldly. So I think that's what he's trying to capture here, because from the feet of this embryo, these not formed feet, you've got a curving arc. If you imagine if you had some curtains hanging in your room and you grabbed it about, about halfway down the bottom, that sort of curving effect, so you go thin at the bottom and arcing, curving around as it's going up. This is the effect that you've got here, going from the feet of the embryo and going up to the top of the page, curving but still on the left-hand side of the page and going off the page. You've got this blue. And to me, it symbolises this effect of the influence of the earthly world, but the influences from the universe as well. And we actually see more of those shapes. We get more of these circular shapes in the background of the overall painting, but the way he's done it as well, and with through transparencies, so you get an effect of a circle going in the background and almost like an ellipse going through them as well, but also coming through to the foreground. So you get these layers of transparency effect that he's trying to achieve. Now, I've already told you that as an artist, he was very much into symbology. This is what he believed in. And we get directly above the embryo, there are two essential symbols. We've got a wooden cross hanging from a piece of string. So it's almost like the cross is the weight on a plumb line, if you imagine, hanging from the top of the cross, which is above this embryo. But interestingly, the plumb line itself, where it goes off the page, that's the top tip of a pyramid. And you get this pyramid shape that that we're looking at, and it's looking as if we're below the pyramid. So you can actually see the one triangular part of the pyramid, and then it's underneath the base triangle, so as if it's above us. And within this pyramid, and the plumb line goes directly through it, is an eye representing the all-seeing eye. So you can see that mix of symbols which he's got, so the influences affecting this embryo. And then again, going along the top of the paper, we get these varying degrees of rays of influence coming down, of red and yellows. So we're still in the womb, but we're getting outer effects, so outerworldly effects. And when we come to the top right-hand side, what do we get? Well, we get a bird diving down from the top right, diving down towards Mary's head, and you can see flames coming out of it. And of course, there's flames in the wings. And what's that? The phoenix. We've got the phoenix rising, so we've got the symbolism within the whole of the story of the phoenix coming down. And then on the extreme right and the bottom, we've got hands coming out from outside the paper, coming inside, hands in supplication and raising with the prospect of something miraculous happening. And if I look at it overall, I get the symbols and I get the colour scheme that he's used. But when you look at Mary, it's interesting. The way he's used the colours, the way he's drawn it, she looks very much like she'd be a figure on a tarot card. And he actually made a set of tarot cards. He designed a new set of tarot cards. And I almost get the feeling that the way he's drawn this, she wouldn't be out of place. And it may be because below her hands and where her veil's coming down in this sort of conical shapes, if you like rays of silk widening at the bottom, we also have a moon symbol. We have moon symbol looking at like a large smile, if you like, going across from the right-hand edge below Mary, below where her elbows would be, and reaching almost three-quarters of the way across the page towards the left as well. So we get this symbology, the way the colour scheme, the way it's drawn, it's very, very much into this mystical world. And hopefully I've given you a pretty good description of an idea of this ethereal painting, which is beautifully painted in watercolours, so you get transparent colours going through, and you get this beautiful light effect of the light going down, hitting the paper below the paint and then coming back up through the colours, which is really quite a marvellous effect, and certainly one that Paul Klee was a master of as well, and you can see that effect. What I'll do is, in the information, I'll get a link to this piece of artwork so that you can see the painting, and I'll link to some of his other work as well, so you can get a really good feel of some of the weird surrealist work that he did, but to give you a fantastic grasp of an artist that comes from a part of the world that actually many of us don't really have an idea of what the artwork is in South America and where its famous artists were. So hopefully I've given you an experience and opened you up to art from a part of the world that's completely new to you. Well, that's it for this week's private tour of the Audio Art Gallery. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and I'll open this door which joins on to the main foyer, and hope to see you next week for another description of an artist and one of his paintings.